Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. Many South African investors are seeking offshore opportunities, whether it is for diversification purposes or looking for a currency hedge, be it economic or a political agenda, neither here nor there. The possibilities are endless. But what has become a more recurring underlying problem in making these decisions is that most individuals don't always realize how their foreign investments may impact their estate on death. Offshore probate refers to the process of applying for the right to deal with the deceased person's foreign assets and proving their will as valid, a valid legal document in a foreign jurisdiction. A grant of probate can be seen as the equivalent of a letter of executorship in South Africa and serves as the formal acknowledgement by a foreign court that a will is enforceable. It also confirms that the persons named as executors under the will have the authority to manage the estate. The process may vary from one jurisdiction to another, which can make it extremely complex. And it's for that reason I invited Albert Kutsia, head of the 91 Global Investment Platform, into the studio today to explore whether probate will be required when invested in offshore domiciled products, and if so, what that entails. Apart from managing sales, Albert is closely involved in the servicing, product marketing, legal and compliance, as well as the events aspects related to the Asset Managers Global Investment Platform. Albert is a qualified lawyer and holds a Bachelor of Commerce and Bachelor of Legislative Law. He is also a certified financial planner. Welcome, Albert.
Thank you. Thank you, Ruan.
Albert, what exactly makes probate so problematic?
Ruan, I think, first of all, we recently wrote as 91 an article on probate, so you're welcome to circulate that to your audience. Secondly, very important, I don't want to scare the clients off, but I think gone are the days, the olden days where I decided to take money out of South Africa to invest, and all I was worried as an investor was worried about, let me invest the money in shares and in unit trust overseas. And from there on, for example, I follow the markets and the performance. Things have moved on from there. Adding to that, South Africa being added to the grey list also created additional complications, additional layers of anti-money laundering requirements, which people need to check, for example. 91 in March 2020 created a masterclass unit to assist independent advisors and wealth managers, which we work with, to assist when clients go overseas, but not only South African overseas investments, but also South African investments, to assist independent advisors, wealth managers, when they have scenarios to deal with. So before I answer your question about probate, I think just to do an initial introduction, now when I get a scenario or that masterclass unit get a scenario about overseas investment, the first question I ask, is the investor a South African tax resident, yes or no? Because that will steer me towards a certain channel to work with. And then the second question, very importantly, is the beneficiaries of that investor. Are those beneficiaries South African or not? And that will also assist me to another layer of looking further. Then things, for example, where probate is included into is things which one have to look at is the investment exposed to overseas CITES taxes, overseas inheritance tax, which normally come into play when I own offshore shares. Definitely probate, which I'll get to now, fees. Fees meaning like, can we family price the mother, the father, the overseas trust, the company, the children in one pocket or fee, which obviously is a lot more fee sensitive and favorable to the family. As I mentioned, are the beneficiaries South Africa overseas? Estate duty, how do I sort of work with that, especially if the investor is an individual, meaning I've never been married, divorced, or widow. Beneficiary nomination and the options available, tax efficiency. If that investor is single, maybe it's the last dying spouse, Is there estate duty and capital gains applicable? And then obviously, lastly, the succession on death is also very important. Now, the second thing I want to highlight to you, probate is not necessarily exposed to all overseas investments and all jurisdictions. So if probate is a worry for an investor, look at where your investment is domiciled, because that domicile may not be exposed to probate. That's another point to make note. The other thing also, probate is not a tax. You heard earlier I used the word CITES tax. So that is a tax. That is the South African equivalent of estate duty. In South Africa, we pay estate duty 20% from 0 to 30 million and 25% from an estate bigger than 30 million. CITES tax in America and the UK, for example, can be as high as 40%. So that's maybe a different discussion for another day to see sort of how do we deal with that. But now to answer your question long-windedly is to say what is the worry about probate? I already said probate is not a tax, but probate for me would be the length it takes to finalize probate in the foreign jurisdiction before they hand it over to the South African executor, assuming the client is South African tax resident, and also the uncertainty. Now, for me, uncertainty means sort of like you have to deal with a foreign law firm to request information from me in South Africa or from my executor or estate in South Africa. In every round, what do they want? What do they want? Remember, whatever they want, we need to send them originally certified copies, which can be lengthy, costly, and also that continuous surprise, when is this going to end? That for me would be my worry, and that is what, if I was the investor, I would like to try to avoid.
Albert, what is the standard time for an estate to be concluded in South Africa? We all know the master's office is not as efficient as it should be. And how will these potential delays and additional costs of international influence that you just discussed have on the dependents and beneficiaries of such a deceased estate?
South African estate can take any time, Ruan. I've seen a client the other day in Cape Town where the children receive the proceeds eventually from their deceased father, which was 7 years later. So it's very difficult to pinpoint how long does a South African estate take into account. Now, very important also, now back to probate, that South African estate cannot be finalized until that first leg, if my overseas investment is in a foreign jurisdiction, first needs to be finalized by that foreign law firm, thrown through the foreign Guernsey, for example, court, to justify the deceased, the will, and the beneficiaries. Now they're bringing it in South Africa. And if you take into account the South African estate already takes so long, so it's very difficult to pinpoint a specific time period to that. Also, South African estate, the master's office, probate, it doesn't discriminate between how big my estate is. So between the have and the have-nots, the time period is exactly the same. Saying that, probate, if you look at Guernsey, for example, will not apply if the investment is, for example, smaller than £10,000, which is very unlikely. Most investments overseas is longer-term investment, longer-term saving pool for generations to come, definitely bigger and larger than £10,000. Another point I can highlight is, which I didn't mention in the initial answer or question, is remember, if you work in South Africa, the executor, it's dealing with my South African estate, is the fee is capped at 3.5% plus VAT. Where, for example, when you deal with overseas scenarios like probate, there's no cap on fee. So they can go back and forth, potential, and there's no control. First, the uncertainty about how long it will take, the uncertainty about how often and what are they going to ask me again to finalize, and also the fee, because there's no cap on that fee that can be paid or be charged.
Albert, as a rule, the proceeds of local pension, provident and preservation and retirement annuity funds do not fall into the deceased estate in South Africa. Is that the same case with retirement income coming from abroad? And what other offshore investment products are available out there where offshore probate is optional or not required at all?
Good question. I think very important. Remember, we'll talk about sort of the estate, the cost, but also we talk about the length. Now, the first thing you mentioned, the comment about local pension, provident preservation funds, and retirement annuities. Yes, it is excluded from estate duty, unless obviously there's over contributions to these funds, which maybe is a different discussion for another day. But remember, all of these products I've just mentioned, even though they're South African, is governed by the Pensions Fund Act. Yes, they don't form part of the estate duty when, for example, you calculate the estate duty for the deceased. But because they form part of the Pensions Fund Act, there's a very important section there, section 37C, which states that the administrator of those products has up to 12 months to determine who are the dependents. So if I have an investment like that and I passed away, then maybe I have a second spouse, or I have dependents, or I have children that were dependent on me during my lifetime. We also have to look at that that's not immediate liquid on death. So keep that in mind. If you look at pension funds or pension streams from overseas, difficult to answer that. There's a clear answer there, Ruan, because I would state there the first thing you look at is the double taxation agreements between South Africa and those countries, because the double taxation agreement overrules everything, sort of what South Africa agreed at the time with that country. But point one. The second thing then also very important to take note there is there are two types of DTAs, double taxation agreements, for income tax as well as for estate duty. Now, quite a few people miss the fact that double taxation agreements for estate duty is for South Africa with other countries in the world is very limited. From memory, there's a couple of countries, but the two main countries is that only we have for estate duty purposes with the US and the UK. No other large foreign sort of the jurisdiction overseas, which is a problem, and you need to look out for that. But most important on that point, make the distinction between DTA for income and DTA for estate duty. Now, when you look at product now product can be used to avoid probate. Now, if you look at, for example, 91 has a very popular overseas global policy wrapper, global sinking fund, and that product is governed by the Long-Term Assurance Act. And immediately a red light goes up, meaning the product allows beneficiary nomination. Now, if a product overseas allows for beneficiary nomination, I'm the owner, Ruan, you are my beneficiary. When I passed away tomorrow, that investment is not exposed to probate, which is quite nice. There's other products that, even though they're foreign, we make use of an SA nominee structure, which means that product, regardless who's my beneficiary one day, in that scenario, we call it the 91 Global Investment Portfolio. That product is not exposed to probate. So just to answer your question also for the audience, not to assume that every single investment out there is exposed to probate, depending on the jurisdiction, depending on the product structure. But watch out, the flip side of that, so watch out for that, even bank accounts foreign can also be exposed to probate. So don't assume it's only for investments and shares overseas. Bank accounts can also be, normally the bank account is the vehicle that needs to provide liquidity for the benefit immediately. Watch out, a bank account overseas can be exposed to probate as well as overseas CITES tax.
Albert, do product providers have the right to determine whether probate is applicable to their products or not? And if that's true, is that true to all jurisdictions? And why is that choice important?
I think because of Masterclass, Ruan, 91, I would like to think is, I don't know how to put it in proper English, is to sort of like, we really like to run on this in the ground with our independent advisors. And we try to do what we need to do to sort of try to take all these things which I mentioned earlier. We almost have, I got it a list of 9 offshore wall of worries, of 9 offshore puzzles, things to say, how can we structure an investment to try to avoid all those things? So what we've done in our research, when we look at probate, yes, a jurisdiction, if you look at Guernsey, is exposed to probate. Yes, that's the fact. But when you have a product provider like 91, for example, and we can, well, what we've stated to say, any of our overseas product vehicles will not be exposed to probate. Very important. If the investor on death was linked to a South African independent advisor dealing with 91, which 91 then, as part of our estate-laid process, to say, go to the advisor, and the advisor will then link or introduce us to the executor of that estate, being South African or overseas, for us then to deal with the executor, that the 91 estate laid process can verify the deceased, the estate, the will, and the beneficiaries, because that in effect is probate. And that's what the probate jurisdiction was doing on behalf of. Difference is you're dealing with foreign lawyers, law firms, foreign currency for accounts and invoices, and a foreign court. Now, 91 have decided that we can do that on behalf of the deceased investor in estate. On one proviso, though, that that client was linked on death to an independent advisor dealing with 91, because that advisory firm will have to introduce us at the time to the executor. Now, where that comes in quite nicely now, which I think is hugely beneficial, I said earlier, use products where product beneficiaries, where the product provide product beneficiaries, great. But in some cases, Ruan, especially if my children now, and nowadays out of 20 families, I'm prepared to say 17 families, 18 families have at least that one child that lives overseas that's going to inherit from the South African mother and the South African father. Now, that child, in a way, is a problem if that child is decided to continue with the investment on the death of the mother and father. Now, the first thing, that child should not invest in a 91 product that make use of SA nominee structure. Now, suddenly that product fall flat. Yes, it worked for ma and pa, but potentially not for the child. Second option, the policy wrapper with beneficiary nomination. Wonderful. But now, if I'm a foreign child, will the, let's look at the UK, for example, is the fact that UK frown on UK beneficiaries inheriting a policy as a non-UK policy, a beneficiary, if that makes sense. So then you use the word estate. Now, suddenly when you use the word estate, probate feature again. Now, that's where 91 came in to say, even if you use the word estate, if that deceased is linked to a South African advisor at the time, who can introduce us to the executor of the estate in South Africa overseas, probate will not apply regardless of your beneficiary nomination. Sorry, Ruan, I'm talking a lot here, but hopefully that made sense.
It does. Albert, the role of the advisor in investments and insurance has never been more important than before, but it seems that estate planning is ever becoming an extension of that. Where do you think the shortcomings in the industry still lie, and how do we bridge that advice in inverted commas divide?
Good question. I think if you look at the success and the popularity of our masterclass unit since March 2020, whatever you said now, I confirm that completely 100%, because not once so far we spoke about markets, we spoke about shares, we spoke about performance, unit trust, etc. We spoke the whole time about structure and financial planning and estate planning. So yes, that is definitely, especially on the offshore side, but in South Africa as well, there's lots of opportunities to structure investments correctly. So to answer your question, I would say step one, almost like what we do, we have those 9 points before we even proceed. Are you a South African tax resident? Yes or no. Are you beneficiaries? Yes or no. No. Now look at the 9 points. You say, how do we structure accordingly as per that scenario? I think that's point sort of important to take. No scenario is similar. Each scenario is different. I think remember to take that into account. For the end client and the investor, or I would say, as I said earlier, definitely in my view, gone are the day where you just take your money out and invest into an instrument, share or unit trust. Try not to do it yourself. Try to do it with the assistance of a qualified independent advisor. That for me is important. If you look at the advisor base, I would say that my view, I can't speak on their behalf, choose your product provider. Study your product provider's offering. Make sure your product provider back you up properly. And also surround yourself with product providers that just can't go and sell you something, but actually can provide you with the expertise around certain scenarios as well. And then if you look at product providers like 91, again, definitely gone are the days where we go to advisor or firms or wealth managers and punt or sell something. We need to add value, in my view, a wider space around the product offering. And also, if you look at product providers like 91, what we've done also, apart from masterclass, We also have established, we call it Masterclass Pro, we may change the word, where we reach out to specialists, independent, they don't work for 91. There's no financial gain or flow of money between 91 and these people, but we've created the Masterclass Pro panel of expertise or experts that if there's certain scenarios we can't answer in-house, we will then refer to these people to be able to assist those clients and also advisors and wealth managers.
Albert, as a last question, CityWire has written quite a few stories in the past on investment structures set up in tax-friendly jurisdictions and moving retirement funds offshore, where pensioners were left to their own or to that of offshore trustees' devices. And later, they or their executives had little to no option of dispute resolution. So long story short, probate might be one thing, but other legal challenges can hold up winding up an estate. And can it happen that an estate remains unwound in perpetuity if a dispute isn't or cannot be resolved?
Yeah, it can happen, most definitely. I had a recent case where, not probate, but CITES tax, the deceased had direct shares in the US, passed away. The CITES tax was about something like $300,000-$400,000. And it's a known fact that CITES tax, the liability, cannot be paid or deducted from the current investment in question. Now, the deceased had no other money overseas. And somehow the state in South Africa struggled to take the money out of South Africa because, remember, you need to get Reserve Bank approval, etc., to be able to pay that tax. Now, the question is that money will not be released to the estate overseas if the taxes are not paid. Now, how do you go about there? So we found eventually a way to pay that and to help the advisor and the client to do so. But a thing like that, for example, can lie open and that money will not be transferred before the initial sort of cost and taxes and penalties are paid. And take into account if that CITES tax in that scenario wasn't paid, run from memory in the first six months, for example, penalties starting to incur as well. So apart from the fact that the estate can't be wind up, the problem is also what about penalties that lie open. But I don't want to scare the audience. It's, I think, very important. It's just to highlight it is just be careful. And also one of the questions is not in my nine, it's now part of another set of 10 questions, which we also deal with assisting advisors, is the one question I can leave you with is if I have overseas investments, yes, the growth, all of those things are wonderful, but whatever I invest into, can whoever that put me in there can guarantee the flow of money on my death? So what I mean with that is if I invest in something, something happened to the investor tomorrow, the advisor, the wealth manager, the product provider must explain to the end client from the date of death, how does it flow? What is the time period and potential restrictions or stumbling blocks in your way until your beneficiary receives the investment, either overseas or in South Africa? And that beneficiary, very important, is not necessarily your spouse. It can also be your overseas trust and your children. And they also potentially can either live in South Africa or overseas. So I know it's quite a lot of provisos here, but that line, guarantee the flow of my money to my beneficiaries on my death. I think that is vital to make sure there's no stumbling blocks or surprise, unintended consequences at the end when it's too late, when we discover that.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And thank you, Albert, for this very enlightening conversation. And the only thing we all really know is that even death and taxes are not that certain anymore. So better we leave all these things to the professionals. So to all our CityWire South Africa listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money, Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uesta. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms, such as Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, goodbye.